97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, congressional testimony about the NCAA and the collegiate model. Our guest, Richard Southall, professor of sports management at the University of South Carolina and director of the College Sports Research Institute. Richard, you were on Capitol Hill not that long ago. And of course, I want to talk about what happened during this hearing. But if I might, let's jump to the end. And then we'll come back and start at the beginning. After a three-hour hearing, you were the last person to speak, and you mentioned that you were disheartened. Why?
Well, I was not surprised, Charlie, by what took place during the 3 hours of the hearing, but disheartened in the sense that this has been my professional life for 17 years is investigating the NCAA and specifically the collegiate model. And I told Senator Rockefeller that I shared his concern that we really didn't accomplish much because I'm not convinced that the Senate or the House or any branch of government or university administrators are really interested in critically and openly and honestly examining the collegiate model of athletics. So that's the disheartening part. However, I do think that there are many things that have been taking place that are actually very positive. So, you know, it's one of those things that my disheartenment is tempered by some optimism.
What's that based on? Is it based on you see the NC2A starting to make some changes, or do you see the NC2A being forced to make some changes?
Well, one of the things that I talked about in my testimony was the notion of organizational rebranding. And in that theory, organizations or institutions oftentimes rebrand themselves in order to present a new, fresh public persona. And I think the NCAA, which includes university members, not just the national office, but I think university members as well as conferences have been forced by the National Labor Relations Board, as well as the ongoing litigation, most of it taking place in the Ninth Circuit in California, that they are being forced to address issues that have been raised by current and former profit athletes, most specifically athletes in football and men's basketball, about various issues. So I think what's taking place is the NCAA, again, that whole totality, is engaged in risk management. They're trying to protect their business interests, as any business will do. And what they have found that they have to do is to offer incremental change, whether it's full cost of attendance or an amorphous stipend, which is kind of odd.
Something along the lines of $2,000
right.
To help buy groceries or,
sure.
Or do your laundry or things like that.
Right. And so these changes, what they have to balance is not being seen by specifically the courts or other relevant stakeholders as giving too much. So that's why they use the term stipend, while at the same time they're saying, we will not pay these athletes. Well, if you look up stipend in the dictionary, it's pay. So it's really interesting kabuki theater that is taking place. And so, you know, that was what was fascinating and has been over the last 6 months to a year, seeing how the defendants in lawsuits and the defendants in an NLRB ruling, so to speak, have been adapting to a changing institutional environment.
You weren't the only person to testify. Devin Ramsey, former UNC football player, was among them. And without getting into all the particulars of what he said, he ended his testimony with a quote. from Shakespeare, I believe, who will watch the watchman? Is that what we're seeing here, that finally someone, we hope, is starting to watch the watchman, starting to rein in, if you will, the NC2A?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting quote that Devin gave, and I think it is very nuanced in what he's talking about, because it's easy for us to use this acronym, NCAA, and place the blame, so to speak, at its feet. But the NCAA president and staff and everyone else will tell you that it's a member organization. So what you have is a system in which the NCAA National Office has no voting rights. The committee members, comprised of various staff, members of athletic departments and presidents, et cetera, have the voting rights. But then who implements it, and then is enforcement, all of those things. So it's a very convoluted model that really has very few checks and balances. And that's what Devin got caught up in, is a system that had no check on what happened to him.
We have, in the five biggest conferences, we have 65 schools. Is it an issue of the NC2A is trying to be all things to all people when there are really two very different, at least two, very different sets of universities, of programs, and on top of that, two very different sets of athletes? You have the revenue athletes and the non-revenue athletes.
You bet. That's the charade, and it really is a charade, and not necessarily ill intentions all the time. But what you have is differing business models. It's as if you were comparing a mom-and-pop auto garage with General Motors, because Division III relies on the revenue of Division I. You have to understand that. So Division III presidents have not – you don't hear anything from them. They're just like, well, give us the money for our championships, and that's all we care about. You have Olympic and women's sport athletes who really don't want to side with the profit athletes to some degree, because they're worried about how are their sport opportunities going to be funded. You have coaches that don't want to rock the boat because salaries are increasing in athletic departments. So you have a number of different entities. As Mark Emmert said, for 95% of the athletes in college sport, the system's working just fine. Well, that's because those 95% rely in many fundamental ways on the revenue of the profit athletes.
And we'll talk more about that 5% when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with our guest, Richard Southall, who recently testified before Congress, before a congressional committee, about the NC2A and the collegiate model. Richard, we were talking about the system, as Mark Emmert says, is working great for 95%. Well, you can't ignore the five. What happens with the five? You made a couple of what I thought were very interesting comments. You mentioned extreme paternalistic claims. What does that mean?
Well, one of the things in athletics that you notice within the hierarchy of how an athletic department is set up and how athletic teams on the collegiate level are set up is that you have the head coach. And it's a very top-down system. You have the athletic director in those. And really, you hear language that's very interesting being used by coaches and athletic directors. They talk about these kids, and they talk about the opportunities that are given to them. And it's very reminiscent of how capitalists in the latter part of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century talked about company town employees. And so we have this notion that these athletes are kids and that they somehow should be like kids at Thanksgiving dinner who are at the children's table and don't take part in the adult conversation. And it's almost as if when college athletes, specifically athletes in the revenue sports, who predominantly are African-American male, choose to speak up about the system, it's almost as if there's this notion of paternalism that don't you realize how good you have it and how much we are giving to you.
How much you owe that to us.
That's right. You bet. And so this whole notion of paternalism is not just male-oriented. The word gives us this suggestion that it is, you know, the head of the household type of concept. But it's also very much economic paternalism, that somehow or another this is a free education, but at the same time this free education has unlimited value. Well, if something is free, in many ways the connotation is that it has a diminished value. That's why we're giving it for free. So which is it? Is it extremely valuable or is it free? And who decides what opportunity? I was talking to a retired airline pilot yesterday about the situation, because quite frequently when I meet someone or visit with someone, they want to talk about this. And I said, you know, if you told me that if I could jump 13 feet and touch a bar 13 feet up, that I could get $1 million, you could tell me what a great opportunity you are giving me. But you know what? I can jump all I want, and I'm not getting to 13 feet. So is the opportunity real? And that's the issue that really comes about, because do we have systemic barriers that really prevent a majority of the revenue generators from accessing that education? And if so, is the system really equitable, or is it exploitative, as Senator Booker from New Jersey talked about? Interestingly, he was the only member on the committee that played Division I football at Stanford.
He played at Stanford. He sort of couched his comments or his questions in terms of civil rights, which I found to be very interesting. And another thing that I thought was very interesting is he set up a series of questions to Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, who said pretty much that he agreed with every point that Cory Booker made. If that's so, then why haven't we seen more changes?
Well, that's a really easy answer for a president of an organization that can continue to say he has no voting rights, which is exactly right. So as Senator McCaskill asked him, well, what's your job then? If you have, you agree with everything, he's being repositioned or rebranding now as a reform-minded president, but has no voting rights, has really not even seems to me that he didn't say he has a bully pulpit as well, because it seems as if he takes his orders, which is very likely, from the college presidents. And so what you have is the ability for people within the organizational structure, within the institutional field of college sport, to be able to point at each other and say, I'd like to do something, but I can't.
We'll return to this discussion on Sports Focus right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Dr. Richard Southall of the University of South Carolina about his recent testimony before a congressional committee regarding the NCAA. Richard headed into these hearings not too long before. We heard from Shabazz Napier after UConn won the NCAA men's tournament, talking about going to bed hungry. Recently, we saw a Twitter photo from a UNC athlete showing his cupboard, which had almost nothing in it. Will the images change things more than any rhetoric might change it?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I think what happens quite often in this discussion of college sport and big-time college sport is it's very amorphous about who the victims are, and are there really victims, or are these willing participants, and how does this economic system operate? And so I think what happens with images is that they personalize this. That can be effective. It can also be ineffective, because quite frankly, many of the fans are disconnected. Many college sport fans are disconnected socioeconomically, ethnically, politically from these athletes that they are cheering on. And so what you have is this sort of gap or chasm between the consumers of college sport and the producers of the college sport product, because it really is the labor, so to speak, using an economic analysis, who people are cheering for, but they idolize these players while at the same time distancing themselves psychically from them. So I think these images are very effective, but I think that's one of the reasons why what I term the NCAA's institutional propaganda has been so effective over the years, is because people don't want to deal with emotionally, intellectually, whatever, the economic disparities in our country that play out within college sport. Because if you look where the athletes come from in the revenue sports, disproportionately they come from lower socioeconomic areas of our country. They come from educational systems that have lower educational attainment. And so you have these things that are unrelated to college sport, but are related to college sport at the same time, that are playing out. And we don't want to have this discussion on a national level about education and socioeconomic disparity, so we surely don't want to have it surrounding an enterprise that we value because we like going to games. You know, and so it's very, when people say it's a very complex, that doesn't mean that it's not well understood. I think scholars have studied college sport now for 50 to 60 years and have a really good idea of what's going on within the system. Now, the question is do we as a society have any interest in really looking at these issues? Or would we prefer just to have our entertainment and then say, well, you know, they're better off than they would have been otherwise? Well, if that's the only thing we can say, that's really an interesting commentary.
And it's a matter of asking and hoping to get answers to the hard questions. And if they weren't hard, then what would it matter? And one that I thought was particularly telling is one of the members of the committee, Heller from Nevada, asked Emmert, if there were a bill in the Senate that would disband the NC2A, tell me why I shouldn't vote for that. So there is definitely, at least among some, the feeling that maybe the NC2A has gotten too big. Maybe it's not fulfilling its mission.
Well, I think not only is the organization, you know, the national office perhaps not fulfilling its mission, but perhaps the mission is so contradictory that there are things that they're just different. Big-time college sport does not have the educational focus. It just doesn't. It has a focus on entertainment and developing a product. And that's not in and of itself bad. The issue that I have is, let's just say it is what it is, and then we can really deal with it.
That concludes this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Richard Southall. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you, as always, for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.